I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
To introduce myself, I belong to a special tribe of what used to be called troubadours. Sometimes they were called minstrels. Now we're called songwriters. We work for, in our songs, a sort of a better world, a rainbow world. Now my generation, unfortunately, never succeeded in creating that rainbow world, so we can't hand it down to you. But we could hand down our songs, which still hang on to hope and laughter.
Today we pay tribute to the blacklisted lyricist Yip Harbert, the man who put the rainbow in The Wizard of Oz, a Democracy Now! Special. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Today, we pay tribute to Yip Harbert. His name may not be familiar to many, but his songs are sung by millions around the world, like jazz singer Abby Lincoln.
Bing Crosby sang it. Ike Beck played it. And Yip Harbert wrote it. Once I built a railroad. I built a railroad, now it's done. Brother, can you spare a dime?
And Tom Waits.
The tower, way up to the sun, with bricks and mortar and lime.
Judy Collins and Dr. John from New Orleans. Peter Yarrow.
Say, don't you remember? Don't you remember? They called me Al. It was Al.
That's Al Jolson. And our beloved Odetta.
Don't you remember? I'm your pal. Say, buddy, can you spare down? A dime.
Brother, Can You Spare a Dime? May well be a new anthem for many Americans. The lyrics to that classic American song were written by Yip Harbert. He was blacklisted during the McCarthy era. During his career as a lyricist, Yip Harbert used his words to express anti-racist, pro-worker messages. He's best known for writing the lyrics to The Wizard of Oz, the movie that inspired the hit Broadway musical and now the Hollywood blockbuster film Wicked. Yip Harbert also had two hits on Broadway, Bloomer Girls, about the women's suffrage movement, and Finian's Rainbow, a kind of immigrant's anthem about race and class and so much else. Today, in this Democracy Now! Special, we pay tribute to Yip Harbert's life. Ernie Harbert is Yip's son and biographer. He co-wrote the book Who Put the Rainbow in The Wizard of Oz? Yip Harbert, Lyricist. I met up with Ernie Harbert at the New York Public Library for Performing Arts at Lincoln Center years ago, when they were exhibiting Yip Harbert's work. Ernie Harbert took me on a tour.
The first place is some business about words And one of them is that the songs, when they were written back in those days, anyhow, always had a lyricist and a composer, and neither one of them wrote the song. They both wrote the song. However, in the English language, you know, you have this is Gershwin's song, or this is, they usually say the composer's song. I've rarely ever heard somebody say this is Yip Harburg's song or Ira Gershwin's song. Both of them would be wrong. The fact is, two people write a song. So I'm going to talk about Yip's lyrics and then lyrics in the song. Now, the first thing we're looking at here is an expression, really, of Yip's philosophy and background, which he brings to writing lyrics for the songs. And what it says here is that songs have always been man's anodyne against tyranny and terror. The artist is on the side of humanity. From the time that he was born 100 years ago, in the dire depths of poverty that only the Lower East Side of Manhattan could have, when the Russian Jews, about 2 million of them, got up out of the Russian shettles and ghettos, and the courageous ones came over here and settled in that area, what we now know as the East Village. And Yip knew poverty deeply, and he quoted Bernard Shaw as saying that the chill of poverty never leaves your bones. And it was the basis of Yip's understanding of life as struggle.
Let's go back to how Yip got his start.
Yip was at a very early age interested in poetry, and he used to go to the Tompkins Square Library to read, and the librarians just fed him these things, and he got hooked on every one of the English poets, and especially O. Henry, the ending. He always has a little great ending on the end of each of his songs. And he got hooked on W.S. Gilbert, the Babs Ballad. And then when he went to Townsend High School, they had them sitting in the seats by alphabetical order. So Yip was H and Gershwin was G. So Ira sat next to Yip. One day, Yip walked in with Babs Ballads, and Ira, who was very shy and hardly spoke to anybody, just suddenly lit up and say, "Do you like those?" And they got into a conversation. And Ira then said, "Do you know there's music to them?" And Yip said, "No." He said, "Well, come on home." So they went to Ira's home, which is on 2nd Avenue and 5th Street, which is sort of upper from Yip's poverty at 11 and C. And they had a Victrola, which is like having, you know, a huge instrument today. And he played him HMS Pinafore. Well, Yip was just absolutely flabbergasted, knocked out. And that did it. I mean, for the both of them. Because Ira was intensely interested in that too. Their lifelong friendship. And Ira went on to be one of the pioneers with 25 other guys, Jewish, Russian immigrants, who developed the American Musical Theater. And it was only after, in 1924, I think, that Ira's first show with George Gershwin, his brother, that they started writing together.
Gershwin's Porgy and Bess in 1940.
Your death is rich, and your mind is good enough.
career took a kind of detour, because when the war, World War One, came, and it was a socialist and did not believe in the war, he took a boat down to Uruguay for 3 years. I mean, he refused to fight in the thing. That's shades of 1968 and the Vietnam War, right?
And why didn't he believe in World War One?
Because he was a full, deep-dyed socialist who did not believe that capitalism was the answer to human community, and that indeed it was the destruction of the human spirit, and he would not fight its wars. And at that time, the socialists and the lefties, as they were called, Bolsheviks and everything else, were against the war. So when he came back, he got married, he had two kids, and he went to the electrical appliance business. And all the time, hanging out with Ira and George and Howard Dietz and Buddy DeSilva, and writing light bursts for the FBA conning tower. And the newspapers used to carry light bursts, every newspaper. There were about 25 of them at that time, not two or three now, owned by two people in the world, you know. And they actually carried light bursts. Well, Yip and Ira and Dorothy Parker, the whole crowd had light bursts in there, and they, you know, they loved it. So when the crash came and Yip's business went under, and he was about anywhere from $50,000 to $70,000 in debt, his partner went bankrupt. He didn't. He repaid the loans for the next 20 or 15 years at least. Ira and he agreed that he should start writing lyrics.
Let's talk about what Yip is most known for. Finian's Rainbow, The Wizard of Oz. Right here, what do we have in front of us?
We have a lead sheet. We are in the gallery of the Lincoln Center for the Performing Arts. And there's an exhibition called The Necessity of Rainbows, which is the work of Yip Harbury. And we are looking at the lead sheet of Brother, Can You Spare a Dime, which came from a review called Americana, which it was the first review which was had a political theme to it. At that time, the notion of the forgotten man. You have to remember what the Great Depression was all about. It's hard to imagine that now. But when Roosevelt said one-third of the nation are ill clothed, ill-housed, and ill-fed, that's exactly what it was. It was at least 30% unemployment at those times. And among blacks and minorities, it was 50, 60%. And there were bread lines. And now the rich, you know, kept living their lifestyle. But Broadway was reduced to about 12 musicals a year, from a prior in the 20s about 50 a year, okay? So it became harder. But the Great Depression was the dominant fact of life in everybody's mind, and all the songs were censored, I use that loosely, by the music publishers. They only wanted love songs or escape songs. So that in 1929 you had Happy Days Are Here Again, and you had all of these kinds of songs. There wasn't one song that addressed the depression in which we were all living. And this show, the Americana show, Yip was asked to write a song get the lyrics up for a song which addressed itself to the bread lines, okay? And so he at that time was working very closely with Jay Gorney. Jay had a tune which he had brought over with him when he was 8 years old from Russia. And it was in a minor key, which is a whole different key. Most popular songs are in major. And it was a Russian lullaby. And it was da 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 da. And Jay had, somebody else had lyrics for it. Once I knew a big blonde and she had big blue eyes. She was big blue like that. And it was a torch song, which we talked about. And Yip said, well, could we throw the words out and I'll take the tune? All right. And if you look at Yip's notes, which are in the book that I mentioned, you'll see he started out writing a very satiric, comedic song. At that time, Rockefeller, the ancient one, was going around giving out dimes to people. And Yip had a satiric thing about, can I share my dime with you, you know? But then, right in the middle, other images started coming out in his writings. And you had a man in a mill, and the whole thing turned into the song that we know it now, which is here and which I can read to you. And if you do this song, you have to do the verse, because that's where a lot of the action is.
Can you sing it to me?
All right, I'll try. It won't be as good as Bing Crosby or Tom Waits. They used to tell me I was building a dream.
I was building a dream.
And so I followed the mob. When there was earth to plow.
When there was earth to plow.
Or guns to bear. I was always there.
I was always
right
there.
On the job.
Right on the job.
They used to tell me I was building a dream. With peace and glory ahead. Why should I be standing in line? Just waiting for bread.
Once I built a railroad, made it run, made it race against time. Once I built a railroad, it's done. Buddy, can you spare a dime?
Yip Arbery singing in 1975.
Once I built a tower to the sun, brick and rivet and lime. Once I built that tower, now it's done. Brother, can you spare a dime?
When was this song first played?
In 1932, and in the Americana Review, every critic, everybody took it up, and it swept the nation. In fact, paradoxically, I think Roosevelt and the Democratic Party really wanted to tone it down and keep it off the radio, because playing havoc with trying to not talk about the Depression, which everybody did. You remember the Hoover thing, not only the Happy Days Are Here Again, but Two Chickens in Every Pot and so forth. Nobody wanted to sing about the Depression either, you know.
Yet, Yip Arbery was a supporter of FDR.
Yes, but politics are politics, you know. And the thing was that, in fact, historically, this was, I would say, the only song that addressed itself seriously to the Great Depression, a condition of our lives, which nobody wanted to talk about and nobody wanted to sing about.
Ernie Harburg, son of Yip Arbery. When we come back from our break, we'll talk about The Wizard of Oz, Finian's Rainbow, and other shows.
Times of confusion like these, when all the world is a hopeless jumble, and the raindrops tumble all around, heaven opens a magic lane. When purple clouds darken up the skyway, there's a lovely highway to be found, leading from your window pane to a spot behind the sun, just a step beyond the rain. Somewhere over the rainbow, way up high, there's a land that I heard of once in a lullaby. Somewhere over the rainbow, skies are blue, and the dreams that you dare to dream really do come true. Someday I'll wish upon a star and wake up where the clouds are far behind me, where troubles melt like lemon drops away above the chimney tops. That's where you'll find me, somewhere over the rainbow, bluebirds fly, birds fly over that rainbow. Why then, oh why can't I? If any little bird can fly beyond the rainbow, why, oh, why can't I?
This is Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman. We continue with our special on our journey through Yip Harburg's life with his son, Ernie Harburg. Ernie talks about how Yip Harburg wrote the lyrics to The Wizard of Oz, the movie that inspired the hit Broadway musical Wicked, and now the Hollywood film by the same name.
Actually, Yip did more than the lyrics. When Yip and Harold Arlen were called in to do the score of The Wizard of Oz, it was Yip who had this executive experience in his electrical appliance business and also had become a show doctor. So he was, that is, when a show wasn't working, you would call somebody in and try to fix it up. He had an overview of shows, and he had an executive talent. And so he was always what they called a muscle man in a show, all right? And he'd already worked with Burt Lahr in a great song, the Woodchopper's song. And
wait a second, Burt Lahr, the Lion?
The Lion. Burt Lahr and most of these people were from vaudeville and burlesque. And Yip knew them in the 20s, but he actually worked with Burt Lahr in this life, Walk a Little Faster and another review. I forget that name, but he and Yip and Arlen gave Burt songs to sing, which allowed him to satirize the opera world, if you want, or the send-off of Rich, you know. And so they had that relationship. Also, Yip knew Jack Haley, the Tin Woodman. And Yip also worked with Bobby Conley as a choreographer in the early 30s on his shows, who was also the choreographer for The Wizard of Oz. So he had a cast here with Arlen, who were, you know, sort of Yip's men, you know what I mean? So when Yip went to Arthur Freed, the producer, who was too busy to work on this musical, and Mervyn LeRoy had nothing to do with it practically, because he had never done a musical before, so it became a vacuum in which the lyricist entered, because he was already to do so. Yip was always an active, you know, organizer. And so the first thing he suggested was that they integrate the music with the story, which at that time in Hollywood, they usually didn't do. They'd stop the story and you'd sing a song, they'd stop the story and sing a song. That you integrate this. Arthur Freed accepted the idea immediately. Yip and Harold then wrote the songs for the 45 minutes within a 110-minute film of the Munchkin sequence and into the Emerald City and on their way to the Wicked Witch, when all the songs stopped because they wouldn't let them do anymore, okay? You'll notice then the chase begins, you see, in the movie.
Why wouldn't they let him do anymore?
Because they didn't understand what he was doing, and they wanted a chase in there. So anyhow, Yip also wrote all the dialogue in that time and the setup to the songs, and he also wrote the part where they give out the heart, the brains, and the nerve, because he was the final script editor, and there was 11 screenwriters on that, and he pulled the whole thing together, wrote his own lines, and gave the thing a coherence and a unity, which made it a work of art. But he doesn't get credit for that. He gets lyrics by E.Y. Harburg, you see. But nevertheless, he put his influence on the thing. And
who wrote The Wizard of Oz originally, the story?
Yeah, Frank L. Baum was an interesting kind of maverick guy who at one point in his life was an editor of a paper in South Dakota, and this is at the time of the populist revolutions or revolts or whatever you want to call it in the Midwest, because the railroads and the Eastern City banks absolutely dominated the life of the farmers, and they couldn't get away from the debts that were accumulated from these. And Baum set out consciously to create an American fable so that the American kids didn't have to read those German Grimm fairy stories where they chopped off hands and things like that. You know, he didn't like that. He wanted an American fable. But it had this underlay of political symbolism to it that the farmer, the scarecrow, was the farmer. He thought he was dumb, but he really wasn't. He had a brain. And the Tin Woodman was the result, was the laborer in the factories who, with one accident after another, he was totally reduced to a tin man with no heart, all right, on the assembly line. And the Cowardly Lion was William Jennings Bryan, who kept trying, was a big politician at that time, promising to make the world over with the gold standard, you know. And the wizard, or the humbug type, was the Wall Street finances, and the wicked witch was probably the railroads, but I'm not sure, all right? So it was a beautiful matchup here with Frank Baum and Yip Harburg, okay? Because in the book, the word rainbow was never once mentioned. And you can go back and look at it. I did three times. The word rainbow was never once mentioned in the book. And the book opens up with Dorothy on a black and white world that Kansas had no color. Just read the first paragraph in it. So when they got to the part where they had to get the song for the little girl, they hadn't written it yet. They had written everything else. They hadn't written the song for Judy Garland, who was a discovery by one of Yip's collaborators, Burt Lane. And nobody knew the wonder in her voice at that time. So they worked on this song. And at that time, Ira, Yip, Larry Hart, and the others thought that the composer should create the music first. Now, they were both locked into, the lyricist and the composer were locked into the storyline and the character and the plot development. So they both knew that at this point there was a little girl in trouble on the Kansas City environment, all right, and that she yearned to get out of trouble, all right? So Yip gave Harold what they call a dummy title. It's not the final title, but it's something that more or less zeroes in on what the situation is all about and what this little girl is going to take a journey, all right? So Yip gave him a title, I Want to Get on the Other Side of the Rainbow.
Now here's what happens, and I want you to play this symphonically. I said, my God, Harold, this is a 12-year-old girl wanting to be somewhere over the rainbow. It isn't Nelson Eddy. And I got frightened. And I said, let's save it for something else, but don't, well, let's not have it then. Well, he fell, he was crestfallen, as he should be. And I said, let's try again. Well, he tried for another week, tried all kinds of things, but he kept coming back to it, as he should have. And he came back, and I was worried about it, and I called Ira Gershwin over, my friend. Ira said to him, he said, can you play it a little more in a pop style? And I played it. I said, oh, well, that's great. That's fine. I said, now we have to get a title for it. I didn't know what the title was going to be. And when he had... I finally came to the thing, the way I logicalized it. I want to be somewhere on the other side of the rainbow. And I began trying to fit on the other side of the rainbow. When he had a front phrase like, da.